This BizNews briefing is brought to you by Investec Business Banking. Make the move to transactional banking with simple, transparent fees.
It's Thursday, the 20th of February. This is your BizNews briefing. And of course, all the news right now is on the South African budget. We speak to a number of key stakeholders throughout the show today, focusing on the South African budget that didn't actually take place yesterday. And we start with Davi Root, CEO of The Efficient Group.
He's around about just after 11 o'clock or so. I got the rumor, I heard about the rumor that there's going to be an increase in VAT. And we were preparing to do a proper analysis of the budget later last night or later yesterday afternoon. And I told my team, I told them, listen, there's not going to be a budget. It's not going to be a budget because any political party that votes for an increase in VAT certainly is going to pay a very, very dear political price for that. And indeed, that's how it turned out to be. There wasn't a budget after all. I had a look at the financial markets. The financial markets reacted quite negative to this, especially the capital market. But I'm not too concerned about the financial markets. I actually think that we are at quite a good place in South Africa. I think this is a politics-wise thing going to change quite a lot. The ANC ran into a brick wall. There's a lot of egg on their face. I don't think the ANC is going to... I think they will continue to lose support. I think the DA, which lost a lot of support recently, I think they acted like amateurs, the way that they managed things like the expropriation bill and the like. All of a sudden, they're the big heroes now, all of a sudden. And I think very importantly is that the political reality is there for everybody to see, and the political, or rather the economic reality. And the economic reality is that we simply cannot afford this massive state machinery anymore. And that we have to make a plan. And there are only basically three options. You keep on borrowing more and you're going to get into very deep trouble. You cannot increase taxes. There's no major tax that can be increased. That means you must cut back on state spending, and you all have to put measures in place to get this economy to grow. So I think this indeed was a watershed. I'm actually quite optimistic and excited about what's going to happen next.
You also made the statement, Davi, that looking at the accounts, there is absolutely no more room to borrow, and that we are in deep, deep trouble. Can you just take me through your comments there?
All right. Okay. Just a couple of things. We know about close to about 6 trillion debt of the state. That's not all, remember. The municipalities owe something like 100 billion rand to Eskom. You have to add that to that because somebody needs to pay for that. And we know that there's close to 700 billion rand that of guarantees of the state, guaranteeing institutions like Eskom and Transnet and the like. If you add all of that together, the actual outstanding debt to GDP is currently 95% to GDP, roughly somewhere there. And in fact, if you read the budget of the Minister of Finance, the leaked budget speech of the Minister of Finance, he said, in there, he says that he's going to stabilize debt to GDP at 76% to GDP. So every year and every medium-term budget statement, whenever he opens his mouth, he shifts the goalposts all the time. He says, we are going to stabilize the debt, but not yet, next year. Every time it's next year. And I'm afraid that the current trajectory with the fiscal deficit where it is, with very weak economic growth, debt is going to become a major problem. We are heading for a so-called fiscal cliff. We are there. And the only option to this, or the only answer to this, is that we must spend less. Debt is something that's going to cause immense damage if things start going wrong. And I can think of a number of scenarios where things can go wrong. One is potential sanctions from Donald Trump. If he decide to put in... implement sanctions, financial sanctions on South Africa, especially when we're so vulnerable in terms of the fiscal accounts, that's going to be very, very painful to the economy.
Davi, where to from here? We've got the budget apparently 12th of March, but ultimately the ANC needs to step back from their 2% VAT increase and stand down, which shows that the DA does actually have teeth.
Yeah, it does show that. I think there's a watershed politically and also economically. And where to from here? The answer is, I just do not know. The only alternative, the only option I see is to cut back on state spending. None of the major taxes can be increased. You cannot increase VAT, clearly, because of political reasons. You cannot increase personal income taxes or company taxes. We are over the so-called Laffer curve there already. We cannot increase taxes. That means we have to cut back on state expenditure. And I've put a long list of things that we can cut back on. And the most obvious one is we can't give 5.5% increase to the civil servants. We just can't afford that anymore. Let's see what Kusatu is going to say about that.
Really great to get Davi Ruert from the Efficient Group and his comments on BizNews. Bearing in mind that Davi has been covering the South African budget for 40 years. I also spoke to John Steenhuisen, president of the Democratic Alliance and also South Africa's Minister of Agriculture. This is what he had to say on the budget that didn't happen.
Well, I certainly think it is a watershed moment, but I certainly don't agree with some of the analysis that this is something to be concerned about. I think it's a healthy sign. We had a budget that was prepared to be tabled here that clearly did not have buy-in support from all parties, including some in the ANC. And it got withdrawn and postponed until a later date so that we could come back with a pro-growth, pro-jobs budget. And I think that this is something to be welcomed. I think it's a very clear sign that there is a government of national unity now with other parties around the table, and that cabinet and parliament is no longer just a rubber stamp, that if you want to get things done, it has to be based on consensus. And I think that South Africans were definitely the winner yesterday. I don't think any of the parties were the winners. I think the people of South Africa were winners because they woken up this morning without a 2% VAT increase to add to the already high cost of living that many are facing.
Agreed. And there is a lot of positive political analysis coming through and saying that this is a watershed moment for the positive, for the country. The question is, why did it come down to the wire? Why couldn't this negotiation have happened before the minister was about to walk up to the podium?
Well, it had been happening. It had been happening for the last fortnight. It was only in the last 2 weeks that it was alerted to cabinet that there was a problem with both the expected, projected income, but also the effect of the SRD grant court judgment, which had indicated that there would have to be a raising of the SRD grant. Now, that money's got to come from somewhere. And there was a 60 billion rand hole in the budget, and we needed to fill that. And a variety of matters were discussed. Nothing was agreed on at that initial meeting. And a couple of days later, we were alerted to the fact that there was now this VAT increase on the table. We've been very clear in all of the meetings we've had, both with the Minister of Finance, but also in Cabinet, that a 2% increase in VAT would not be acceptable to us and to our electorate and voters, and that we would not be able to support a budget in Parliament that had a 2% VAT increase on it, because we care deeply about the South African citizens who are already, as I say, buckling under a huge strain. 2% of increasing VAT would have led to, I think, greater inflationary pressures on the economy, but also would have added to the burden of already overburdened citizens. And we mustn't underestimate the impact of these things on the ordinary lives of ordinary people. And we've seen in Kenya what happens when decisions are made thinking that, oh, well, you know, people will just accept it. And I think that we've managed to avert that. And I think that's a positive thing. And I think it's a way a mature government operates.
I was chatting to Davi Ruert from the Efficient Group just a moment ago, and he is saying that no party who is concerned about their citizens goes ahead with a dramatic VAT hike. And this is effectively what the ANC was trying to do. Does it show that the ANC is actually not operating in the interests of the man and woman on the street in South Africa?
Well, I wanted to say that it precisely shows why coalitions are so important and so useful, because a single party with a single idea doesn't get an opportunity to now impose that on the rest of the country. It has to now be part of a negotiation. And the fact that the DA and other parties and some within the ANC put their foot down very clearly shows that this is a far healthier situation. I'm concerned that the matter was taken, obviously, to the wire, despite the very clear opposition from people within cabinet and as parties. And that was from all parties. And I think that it's a healthy sign now that a pause was put on this. Said, okay, we're not going to proceed down this road. We need to go back to the drawing board. Let's find something that's pro-growth, pro-jobs, and doesn't burden its citizens. And as I said at the beginning, I think the citizens are the real winners in this particular situation.
At Sun Exchange, we make going solar simple, profitable, and completely risk-free. Join over 100 satisfied South African customers already enjoying the benefits of risk-free solar. Start saving today. visit sunexchange.com and join the solar revolution.
In the world of business banking, projections, numbers, and your bottom line can often triumph over relationships. At Investec, we value both. That's why we understand that running a successful business takes endurance, drive, and partners who are willing to walk the journey with you. Make the move from business as usual to Investec Business Banking. Out of the ordinary.
You can catch that full interview on biznews.tv on our YouTube platform. Now, in other news, Alec Hogg, the founder and editor of BizNews, is on the ground at the Alliance for Responsible Citizenship conference in London, and he's caught up with a number of very interesting players, the first being John Endres, who is the CEO of the Institute for Race Relations. Let's listen in.
Let's go home again. Let's go to our BizNews community and... what, if you were putting a presentation together for your team, what would be your big takeaway here that the people at the island are need to know, must know?
So my big takeaway really would be that we're exiting an age of self-delusion and self-indulgence.
What does that mean?
It means that we are, I think that we have been telling lies to ourselves in South Africa for
a while. We've been, to put it coarsely, bullshitting ourselves.
Yeah. And one of our bullshits, I think, has been that we are... we think that there are shortcuts, you know, so that you can achieve economic growth through redistribution, or you can uplift everybody on the basis of race-based policies. And what we're discovering is it doesn't work, and it has not produced the results that we want. And my sense is that the rest of the world is emerging from the self-delusion and is taking a hard look at reality and changing how it interacts with reality and what sort of policies it chooses. And I think South Africa is going to be a few years behind that development. Because currently we're still holding onto our delusions. We're still being self-indulgent despite the cost, which is becoming visible.
How long have we been going backwards? The GDP per capita. In other words, the value of the economy for each person who lives in South Africa. How long has that been going backwards?
Well, we typically say that there's a breaking point around 2008. And I'm not sure if it's true for GDP per capita per se. That might have still continued rising for, you know, a couple of years after 2008. But since then, it certainly declined. And that, of course, was the year of the great financial crisis, the global financial crisis, when other countries also experienced declines in GDP per capita. But other countries came out of it again, and they started increasing their, you know, employment, their GDP per capita, which South Africa didn't do. We failed to sort of come out of that. The same with COVID. The rest of the world comes out of it, you know, gets back into a bit of growth and creating jobs.
It's going down.
And we keep going down, or we stagnate. And that's 2008, more or less, is since when we've been...
There are a couple of things I want to throw at you. The one that came to me very strongly was that the Brits were really angry. Nigel Farage has had a conversation here, and he's now the leader of the most popular political party in the UK. Surprise, surprise. And he was saying, we're putting all of these regulations into our system so that we cannot be competitive anymore.
Yes.
So we're getting rid of our steel plants.
Yes.
And the steel will then get made in China, dirty steel, because we want to be the cleanest in the world, this virtue signaling.
Yep.
And we then import it back to South Africa. Yep. We've got a situation right now in South Africa where we're doing that. We've got BEE, which makes it expensive. We've got minimum wage. We've got a whole raft of things that make us uncompetitive. And now ArcelorMittal about to close down the steel plants. Surely there's a wake-up call there somewhere. How do we take this knowledge and, hey, guys?
Well, so I think there's a wave of deregulation spreading through the world. In Argentina with Javier Milei, in the United States with Donald Trump, probably also in Canada with Pierre Poilievre if he gets elected as the next Prime Minister of Canada, and in some other countries as well, India and Vietnam, for example. If we follow that example, then we will be successful. You know, so I think the countries that deregulate and that pursue economic growth with as a high priority will succeed in that. It's our choice whether we do that or not.
Well, that full interview with John Endres, who is the CEO of the Institute of Race Relations, is available on biznews.tv. Staying with the Alliance for Responsible Citizenship, Alec also caught up with Rob Hirsov, who is well known to the BizNews community. Let's listen.
One of those discussions, they spoke, I think it was the Trump energy minister.
Yes. Said right. that we would like to help South Africa exploit its resources. And there, I think he was not just talking about coal, but shale gas and offshore oil and gas
resources. Onshore and offshore.
Those are, they well, epic. And could transform South Africa's economy.
Absolutely.
How do you get that message through to an ANC or to the government of national unity, rather?
Nothing good will happen to this country with the ANC in charge. And nothing good will happen to our beloved South Africa with the ANC even at 40%. The ANC is making South Africa uninvestable.
But if you tell Gaten that story, he kind of gets it because of...
He gets it.
Beaufort West, which has got shale gas.
Look at Namibia and look at Mozambique. And we are the absolute extrapolation of both those coasts. We have massive, massive onshore and offshore gas reserves and oil. And we just need to unlock them. And Gwede Mantashe, I think deep down, knows that and believes in it. But he's, you know, he's the wrong person to run this for.
It almost feels like coming here, Rob, that the potential there with a new person in the White House who isn't saying go for net zero, who is saying use the resources that you've got, particularly oil and gas, that could be a game changer for South Africa at last.
You know, where Gwede is right is he said that the sort of net zero cultural Marxists have, from Europe mainly, have been enforcing their evil doctrine on South Africa and preventing us from using our own fossil fuels to develop our economy. And I agree with Gwede. We need to get these greenies out of our lives and footsack the greenies as quickly as possible. We need to be energy independent, and we can do it very quickly.
On the international front, it appears that U.S. President Donald Trump is brokering a Ukraine-Russia peace deal without Ukraine's Zelensky, who he calls a dictator. Our colleagues at Bloomberg have the full story.
Tony, this does not seem like it's going to end particularly well. The tension is clearly there between these two leaders now.
Yes, that's right, Tom. After this week's US-Russia talks in Saudi Arabia and the phone call between President Trump and Russia's President Putin, Ukrainian and European leaders were already pretty gloomy about the prospects for relations with the US in trying to reach a deal to end the war. And this comes close to something like a breach between the US and Ukraine now, which relies on the US as its biggest military and financial ally in resisting the Russian invasion. And it was really striking that President Trump outlined, as he put it, how Zelensky had done such a terrible job and that his country had been shattered and that so many people had died. But he didn't at all appear to draw the conclusion from that, which is to identify the person responsible for causing all this death and destruction, which was Russia's President Vladimir Putin, who started the war. And certainly in the Kremlin, they'll be delighted by this turn of events. Russian state television is already very pleased and clearly believes that the US under President Trump now is taking much more of their perspective on this war and are quite hopeful that terms will be favorable to Russia when some kind of deal is proposed.
Yeah, and we've heard European leaders trying to push back on a Trump that, as you say, is now mirroring the talking points of the Kremlin on this conflict. How much support can Ukraine expect to get from Europe? Can they rely on European support?
Yes, European leaders have very much been put on the spot now because it's down to them whether Ukraine will get continued support if the US begins to pull away to try to pressure Zelensky into agreeing to a deal. The UK and France are putting together what's being called a reassurance force, which in itself doesn't sound very reassuring, but the idea seems to be that there'll be something like 30,000 European troops who would help to protect Ukrainian cities and critical infrastructure like ports. But crucially, they would not be deployed along the frontline areas in eastern Ukraine. And that's 1,000 kilometres, something like a 600-mile front line. And under any peace agreement, somebody would have to police that. Estimates have put it at something like 100,000 troops that would be required to do that. But already, many European countries are saying that they won't be ready to commit troops to the ground in Ukraine to help any such effort. So much of it's going to depend on US support. British Prime Minister Keir Starmer is going to Washington next week to try and sell this idea to President Trump. But Russia has said it's against European troops in Ukraine. And so on current form, you'd imagine that Trump might be willing to listen to the Russian argument.
Definitely no shortage of news flow, both locally and globally. We'll be back with another BizNews briefing on Monday. Thanks as always for joining us.
This BizNews briefing is brought to you by Investec Business Banking. Make the move to finance solutions that enable real growth.